This presentation was recorded at DevOps Days 2010 in Mountain View, California. This audio file and others like it are available for free download on InfoQ.com.
So this next topic, disclaimer, I am not a monitoring expert by any means, which I think is why...
Any monitoring experts in the house here?
Which is why I got elected to be to run this panel as well. Because monitoring or visibility in general is one of those areas that gets balkanized within IT organizations, from testing to monitoring, to analytics, to, you know, performance analysis. Things get segmented into silos. They belong to different jobs and roles. And when you take a step back, it's really all the same thing. It's visibility. And you can't drive a car without a windshield. You can't fly, you can't do a sub without its sonar. You need visibility in some shape or some way for all of us to perform our jobs. It's one of those things we need to be able to share with each other in the organization and something we can actually agree on. So we have a kind of a broad selection of folks here that kind of hit this topic from different areas. And I'd like us to help kind of, drive it from every direction we can. And everybody jump in, because I'll probably run out of questions pretty quickly. So you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Gareth from Apseo, from Santa Cruz, California, via Southwest England. I have mostly a testing QA background, but I moved to operations a few years ago. So I'm particularly interested in the kind of synchronicity between testing and monitoring, reporting test results in a succinct way.
Okay. My name is Javier Soltero. I was most recently CEO of a company called Hyperic, which makes monitoring management software for web applications. Prior to that, I was actually in various roles, from senior engineer at infrastructure software companies like Netscape, all the way to actually having an ops role at a variety of web startups that didn't have ops teams that were good enough to own the 24/7 operations of the site. So they were pretty much absent. So that's kind of, I've been looking at this, what is now called, I guess, DevOps, and prior to that was really just a applied IT for very fast-moving businesses. I want to say this conference has been tremendous so far today, so thanks for organizing all this.
My name is Jyoti Bansal. I'm founder of AppDynamics. At AppDynamics, we build performance monitoring and management for Java applications by injecting visibility in the code in production. My background is I've worked on the dev side of web operations, web applications. I've worked on the operations side, and I've been building products to manage and monitor web applications.
My name is Matt Ray. I'm the community manager for Xenos. Xenos is a commercial open source project, and so my job is to go and evangelize, get users, and show people how to integrate their systems with Xenos, whether it's monitoring, integrating with configuration management, their ticketing systems, to kind of round out everything that a DevOps shop is going to need. You got to monitor everything. So,
I'm Ishai Smith, Director of Engineering at Kaching, previously from LinkedIn, which it's great to be back here. Kaching is a financial web company running every day millions of dollars worth of transactions. Yesterday, we had 95 deployments, and it's a no event. Like, we could have more easily. May I say we're hiring? Or no?
Seems like
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Hiring.
That's it.
Great. So jumping right into it, there's a reason why Ishai could make 95 deployments yesterday in a real application in the financial services world. And some people call it continuous deployment, but really, I think what's, if you look behind it, it's really continuous testing. They call it your business immune system, right? And it's everything from, unit tests to functional tests to the monitoring to real-time analysis of traffic to look for deviations from the norm. And I think it's interesting because it's sort of like this, it's kind of a lightning rod, right? It's a good example of what happens when you can actually tie together all these different aspects of visibility. So the question I want to throw out there, perhaps we can kind of go around the horn for one or two turns here to think, where does this visibility idea have to go to? What are the different pieces that we need to tie together to truly get that? The Army calls it situational awareness, right? That's why U.S. Army is best army on the planet, because they know everything about the battlefield at any given time. That's what they'll say, or their website says. So, how do we build that situational awareness in IT? where do we and what do we have to do to get there, and what are the pieces that have to kind of tie into that?
Disclaimer, I was an officer in the Israeli army.
And you would know.
Also, not too bad.
Which could explain why you built what you built.
So I see visibility as it's a multi-layer defense lines. There's, well, in software, especially in the business we're at right now, you have to have a lot of defense lines in order to verify that they're both business, the business side and the quality of the software is good. Defense line may be testing, unit tests, integration tests, on deployment time, checking that the system works and functions right. The hardware systems, the everything, like, and most important, the business. So you may test. There's no end to ways you can test, and we have at least 6 different tiers of testing in our system. And where we deploy, almost each of them may say, okay, stop the build, stop the deployment, and roll back the last revision, and let's see what's going on, what's wrong. We're so automated that when an engineer checks something in, you probably heard Adam talking about it, he can write in the comment of the check-in, I want to deploy service foo, and boom, you know, it runs through a test, runs through all of the layers of monitoring, it gets deployed and done. If one of the layers breaks, we roll back. So it's extremely important for us. Whenever we see a breach, we add another layer of defense or enforce an existing one. Yeah, that's how we work. That's how we can do this 95 deployments a day.
So if you're running an IT shop and you're the backbone of the business, the service that your company is providing, you know. And so what you must be doing is you have to have, you know, situational awareness of everything that's going on. And so you're going to need to instrument things from, you know, the bare metal hardware up to the OS, to the databases, to the applications. And then that you're going to roll all that up to, you know, what are our metrics that are coming out? You know, what kind of things can we measure? And so, you know, you have to have the ability to integrate and instrument everything in between, and then you have to have a tool that's flexible enough to, you know, plug in things that, you know, the shop had no idea that you were going to need in the future. And so, you know, that's kind of our pitch, is that, you know, hey, let's monitor everything.
So one of the key aspects of DevOps is that the goals of Dev and Ops should be aligned towards the business goals. Right. So what I think is there are really three dimensions of visibility that you need. Starting from the top, visibility inside your business metrics or in your business goals. And the second is visibility inside your application. How is your application serving the business from a code level, from a transaction level? And then the third is the infrastructure level, because your infrastructure is serving the application. So you need visibility in all those three dimensions to be really successful. It has to start from the top, from the business metrics level, for any DevOps kind of environment to be successful.
So I agree with Jyoti here. The one thing I'd like to add, though, is too often the temptation in trying to achieve this type of situational awareness is to throw tools at the problem and either buy tools from people like us, maybe, hopefully, or to build them yourself, like we saw in some of the earlier Ignite talks. And what's missing here is actually that you could have all the visibility in the world, and, you know, all of us, and there's a variety of people that offer different ways to accomplish this, but if you don't take into account the audience and who the actual consumer of a lot of that information is and what their bias might be when they're coming into, you know, either diagnosing a problem or planning for a new release or doing anything like that, you end up creating these sort of completely misaligned interests, right? You have people, certainly in the monitoring world, where you might have complete instrumentation everywhere, right? You might have visibility into every single nook and cranny of a complex application. But if I step into that conversation and I sort of, I'm one of the more sort of traditional IT professionals that's siloed around one discipline, like say I'm the proverbial networking guy, or as John was pointing out earlier, I'm the Oracle guy. Well, I think life begins and ends at the database, and my first job is to basically isolate all the metrics that are related to the database, prove that the database isn't the problem, and then, poops, pass it on to whoever that is. And that's one of the fundamental, that problem can't be solved. Everybody, every one of those people shows up to the conversation with their own grab bag of tools, whether it's Nagios or Ganglia or whatever it might be. The better thing to do, and this is what I think is so interesting about the DevOps movement, is to look at the organization and say, how do we actually make sure everybody has the right responsibilities here, even though they might be coming at it from a different point of view, and then sort out, you know, what kind of tools do we need to deploy, because too often the tools end up sucking anyway, so they don't really help solve the problem.
Yeah, building on what the other panelists have said, I think a big challenge for me has always been how to represent what you're monitoring. I think everyone knows how to implement various tools, Zenos and Nagios, Hyperic. They can monitor hundreds and hundreds of different services at a time, but there's going to be one or two people watching those at all times. And how do you kind of bubble that up into something that somebody can understand easily? Maybe get a high level, like for instance, the Nagios Firefox plugin is my favorite thing. It's just a little square on the bottom of my Firefox browser. It goes green if everything's good. As soon as one thing goes wrong, it goes red and makes a nasty noise. I think the challenge is not only what to monitor, but how to represent it to make it easy for people to go take action on when the metrics go wrong.
So there's a concept I like to kind of harp on, and it's, you know, data everywhere, but not a lot of knowledge. And, you know, monitoring, testing, and this isn't new, right? I mean, since the dawn of the IT age, right? I mean, there's been, you know, testing tools, testing companies, monitoring tools, monitoring companies, methodologies, ideas, practices. You know, it should be in a better situation. But if you go to the business folks now, you know, is anyone's questions being answered? Does anyone feel like they have the dashboard that actually answers the business questions for them? And, you know, most of the time, they will say no. And even the ones that say yes, sometimes they say it because they don't know what's even possible, right? So we sit up here and we talk about tie things to the business metrics, and, you know, we talk about it like we know how to do it, yet as an industry, we seem to not do it, right? And, you know, we're seeing a new wave of companies coming up, and, you know, a new wave of practices coming around. Are we going to solve anything? Why is it different this time? And what's causing this disconnect between one group thinking it's getting a lot of information and another group saying they're not fulfilled by what's being presented to them?
Sure. I don't think I have any big answers to that one, but I think the visibility is one thing, like we've been talking about, but what's shown and who sees it is really the key, and I don't really have any answers to that, so well.
I don't know. There's the answer is always different depending on the company, right? But what I can add for that is, in our experience, certainly at Hyperic, what we found was, if you were to sort of separate traditional enterprise companies, where people in this room would be referred to as IT versus more forward-thinking web companies, software as a service companies, people who do business fundamentally different, and where people in this room would be referred to as ops, or the majority of them anyway, those companies tend to have a better shot at actually defining dashboards and a lot of the metrics and so forth that are important for their business. And part of it is because it is, you know, if, you know, Flickr or any of these other sort of key properties goes down, I mean, that is the business. That's how they make their money. It's not necessarily a service to the business. Ops people aren't a cost center. And in those environments, and certainly some of the ones that we were fortunate enough to work with, we found that actually the culture, the responsibility of instrumenting applications and building for manageability, et cetera, was very equally distributed between the developers and the operations team. So developers would not release a feature unless it had the appropriate JMX hooks or the appropriate exposure of visibility, both technical things that developers can look at, as well as, you know, if I'm the product manager for such and such a feature, and I'm wondering why we have a decrease in new subscribers, I can actually point to the business metric that actually reflects that. Product managers don't know how to do that, right? So culturally, you have to get to the point where developers feel like they actually are responsible for bringing that in, and you build an engineering process that actually incorporates that. It's very hard to get to, but it certainly helps.
And I completely agree. Like, we hear this a lot in my experience at AppDynamics, talking to customers, that data is not the problem, or, you know, lack of data is not the problem. It's the information out of the data, or the knowledge out of the data is the problem. Getting a lot of data is easy. How do we get meaningful information out of it? And that's where, you know, a lot of the monitoring investment and the monitoring technologies have to solve the problem. And so there are multiple aspects to it. One is, having the business goals or the business metrics identified early on. As part of a DevOps kind of organization, if Dev and Ops are shooting towards those business metrics, you can start building those in your monitoring goals very early on. Second thing that we see a lot is, ability to late bind some of the visibility inside what data you need. Right? So that also allows for, these kind of business goal changes or changes around, if the product manager doesn't know early on, what metrics you need to track your business, the business folks don't know what do they want to look in the dashboard, and if they're asking for more information, can you late bind it, or does the developer always have to build it inside the code?
We actually have a customer who, developers and operations are working hand in hand, where operations, when development says, hey, we have a new feature coming down the line, they say, well, you need to tell us what metrics are you going to expose and what you're going to monitor. And so when they're writing that application, they know, this is what I'm going to expose. Here's the hooks I'm going to put out. And so, they've instrumented their stock exchange where, as transactions move down the pipeline, they're exposing like, hey, we're getting slow here. We're catching back up here. And so, yes, they're watching the hardware and everything below it, but really they're watching their business, and developers, they know that they can't sign off on a new feature until operations says, hey, we're ready to go. Thanks for the feature. We're watching it for you now, and so you have that successful handoff. Yeah, right.
So I think the best approach for this problem is, well, it's easy. You have two steps. First is hire the best engineers. Second step is give them root password for everything. Yeah. Trust them.
Yes. Yeah.
So, well, what I mean by that is
now we're getting
it's a fundamental culture change. We have engineering, and we have people who are doing ops. By saying ops, they're actually automating things. They enable engineers to do things. So maybe ops will organize a data warehouse, a reporting tool, a monitoring system, whatever, whatnot. Then engineers can do whatever they want. They have the tools, they can change them. If an engineer builds a new feature, which involves with some customer data, whatever data, this engineer knows best which data needs to go where and which data is most important to the business folks. Because these engineers talk to them. So enable the engineers to do whatever they want. Just build the tools for them. Don't have the barriers between departments like ops and engineering stop them from doing this. And if you have good engineers and you trust them, then it's golden. If you don't trust your engineers, look for another company or, just fire them. Because it's not going to work.
You're hiring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got a question for the audience I want to throw out there. Step up to the mics if you want to answer it. Is how many of you feel like you're actually solving, you're actually answering the questions that the business fundamentally wants to know? The business folks fundamentally, if we asked them today, if they were here in front of us, they would say, yes, they're answering the questions that I want to know. Or conversely, they feel like they aren't answering those questions and maybe what's going wrong. So if you got some war stories either way for doing a good job or doing a bad job. But while you're thinking about that, come up. I want to kind of put one more question to you guys before we do the back and forth. And that's, we talked a lot about culture today, right? So what are some of the best practices you've seen or lessons you've seen or stories you've seen about companies that really had a good culture of visibility, like testing, monitoring, just, collectively, what are sort of the indicators of that the culture is going in the right direction towards what needs to happen in terms of visibility?
Well, a good culture is culture of quality, as I see it. It means everything needs to be in high quality. You don't ever have test suite that breaks. You have full coverage, and by coverage, I'm not saying this, idiotic, we have 100% coverage, but engineers are really passionate about covering all of the scenarios. Every commit they have passes the tests. Think things like that. So once you have it, then I think you have it done. And the war stories or things like that, Kaching, for example, whenever a test fails, there are blinking lights all over the office. There's a small penguin that shouts the build is broken. Everybody knows that something's broken, and you fix it immediately. Right after that, less than 3 minutes. Once you have that, then everything evolves around it. Everyone, including the CEO, CTO, whoever, they know that, oh, we cannot, you know, release something because it's broken. We have to fix it immediately. And they know that if there's no test, then obviously there's no feature. And it's very well ingrained into the culture.
Being part of an open source project, to me, one of the best patterns that you can have as an operator is sharing. You know, is cooperation and sharing knowledge. You know, you don't have to go out on the internet and tell everyone, you know, here's root, but you need to share within your own operations, you know, how we do things. You know, you don't need to have, you know, the one guy who sits in an office and, you know, everyone has to come and grovel for help. You need to be used to, you know, hey, here's how I did it. Here's how you can do it. And then you can get feedback, you know, and, you know, if you happen to be, you know, using an open source product, you can share your knowledge with other users, you know, share your solutions. But I think that is really, you know, the kind of culture that we need to get around. You know, we need to talk more. You know, we need to get out and you know, hang out in bars with each other and socialize. You know, it's not just, you know, clock in, clock out. You need to, you know, come to conferences and share.
I completely agree with Matt on this, that, you know, information sharing is one of the big part of cultures that have been successful with good monitoring and good visibility. If you have this kind of a territorial culture around, like, you know, people want to hold on the information because information is power that they get within the organization, that becomes a big inhibitor for the flow of visibility. And, you know, so in terms of war stories or example, I'll give example of one of our large customers, Netflix, you guys all know. So what if you go to Netflix headquarters, the thing that impresses me that it starts with visibility at the top level. The first thing you see in their lobby is their user satisfaction score that they are putting there, like how many users are satisfied. When you go inside there, you see in there they have visibility inside there, you know, how their each of their transactions is performing, how visibility inside, you know, where the bottlenecks are at any point of time, visibility inside infrastructure, and then all of it is shared among everyone inside the organization. And so that's kind of information sharing culture. That's the biggest part of, you know, having this visibility flow across all across, and that's very, very, very critical for success for a DevOps organization, because, you know, you want to avoid the blame game. You want everyone to have shared responsibility, and shared responsibility and avoidance of blame game can only happen if, like, everyone has visibility and information sharing going on, and people are not hoarding information with each other.
So for me, it's actually quite simple, and it's something that I've seen both at customers and even within my own company. It comes down to money. Pay people well. Hire the best people. Make sure they're adequately compensated. And make sure, actually, and this is an interesting thing to do, when you're talking about budgeting for hiring operations people and QA and engineering, very often it's the VP of engineering or the executive or director that's in charge of doing the engineering hiring that's hoarding all the money and the budgeting and saying, oh, these, you know, I need to hire engineers and developers are expensive, and so that person might get the first cut at deciding how much headcount is allocated to that particular role. And the truth is that can be a recipe for disaster, because you end up getting perhaps a bunch of rock star developers, right, that feel like they might be, you know, the shit, right? And then yes, there you go. The other thing, and this is actually something else we saw, was ideally, and this is difficult, you should have, and we there was some discussion about this earlier on, but in terms of incentive and compensation, making sure that there's some level of uniformity in terms of how, you know, in terms of bonuses or whatever it is, that people participate in the success of the company and that everybody has a shared sense of responsibility that comes back to their pocketbooks when it comes to site outages, performance issues, releases being on time, et cetera. And often that can be solved by actually having a one executive that owns perhaps operations and development rather than two that are going to be arguing the whole time. It's you know, more difficult than it sounds, but it we've seen certainly that helps, because that's one less argument to have, and it produces really good results.
Yeah, really briefly for me, just share everything, put all your metrics online so that the whole company can see them, not just the people that are monitoring them. What you can't describe online, make sure you have regular conversations. And in my experience, you'll find that you can't give people too much information. They'll come and ask you if they don't understand something. But if they don't have it, they don't know what to ask you.
Apparently, you're supposed to give them root, too.
Right? I'm not so sure about the root thing.
All right, so we got some lines going here. On the left over here. Fire away.
To the question, are we answering what the business needs? We are going through the SLA process literally today. And, you know, so they're like, oh, 3 nines, 5 nines, whatever. And what they're measuring is ping time, you know, how many ports are flapping and things. I said, are we going to go through this fantasy exercise again, really? We're not going to write anything that says, hey.
Who's in that conversation?
It's just operations.
Just ops?
Just operations. Okay. We're a production operations shop. We do genomes, so there's no customers. It's just a factory floor that does all this junk. We have a single VP for operations and engineering. He is very savvy. So, you know, that's all very good, but we get into our meeting and, like, well, wouldn't we like to know whether we could sequence a genome? Like, how many genomes could we sequence right this second? Wouldn't that be the most interesting metric? And they're like, oh, no. Like, great. You know, and so I actually become demoralized. I'm like, it's just a fantasy what we're doing here. This 5 nines thing. Three.
Why not? Why do people vote down even such a basic question?
Well, because it's very straightforward. I mean, part of the it's great to have a panel conversation where, you know, you control everything, but you don't necessarily control everything in every environment. And you have different levels of, like, so the people who are at sitting at the table also have a huge other number of things to do. Monitoring and SLAs are not, there is no monitoring person at our job. There is a funny instance where one person worked at Netflix where they had a person who worked for 2 years on their monitoring thing, and he was constantly saying, well, at Netflix, we could just look at this. And he said it like 8 times, and eventually, like, well, what was the infrastructure? Like, oh, we had a guy who was dedicated to it for 2 years. Like, well, yeah, okay. We could do it too if you want to dedicate someone, but we don't have a dedicated monitoring person. And I think just what happens is you can pull Zenos or Nagios or whatever you want out. It's nice and easy to generate a template to go ping check everything. I mean, port checks, ping checks, all this stuff. Okay, I acknowledge you have to have them. Worse than useless. Yeah, I mean, because it makes people think that there's something going on and there's not. So that's, someone said racket earlier. Like, monitoring mostly is a racket to pretend.
Please, someone Twitter that. That's a good one.
Well, I mean, if you're pretending you're going to do 5 nines, I call it pencil whipping. All right, we're going to just pencil whip this whole thing. We're going to pretend that there's 5 nines. We'll massage the data at the end to prove that we had, you know, 4 nines and 1 8. So we got somewhere to go next quarter, right? But we're not writing, you know, a custom plugin you can do in a day and tell everything about the business. A custom event handler, well, gosh, that can go get you logs. It can scrape them all together. It can grep out what you want. You can get there with a tidy package. Like, oh, there was a problem. Everything about it is in FUBAR. Go look, and you can troubleshoot it. The right people are notified. I mean, so that's it. That is my soapbox. Monitoring's a racket right now, and if you're not writing custom monitors or event handlers, it's almost a joke.
Great. Over here on the right. I don't want to say that one. That says it all.
A comment earlier was to be sure not to guess what the business wants visibility into or guess what metrics they are, and to go sit down with the business. I would just a comment, really challenge all of us to remember that, you know, it's not like they're the business. I think we're all part of the business. But when you're having that conversation, remind yourself that just because the business, now I'm doing it, asks for a certain metric or a certain kind of visibility, doesn't mean they're even asking for the right thing. I mean, I can recall conversations where we need to sit down every month and review CPU and memory. We want to see the memory on the boxes, and we want to see our CPU utilization, because if CPU is down at 10%, then we're happy. But if CPU is way up there at 80, 90, and God forbid it spikes at 100, that's terrible. And I'm thinking, no. You got it all wrong. That means we've got all this idle equipment sitting there that we're not using. And by the way, is that really what you want to know about your application, is the amount of memory it's using? Is that how your customers decide whether or not to spend money? No. How about we track a transaction? How about we track, like the Netflix example, customer satisfaction? You know, let's find some metrics that are really PKIs, not the traditional out-of-the-box management tools and what they profess you need to be monitoring, because usually that stuff, at the end of the day, doesn't matter.
So I have a question for, this is for the audience or for the panelists or everybody. How many folks out there actually have a permanent program in place where people from multiple disciplines within your organization, different, you know, the business, the marketing, finance, the development, the operations, the whole team gets together, or there's a board that actually decides and looks at these metrics on an ongoing basis? We talk about it. So if anyone has experience with it, I mean, what, you know, want to say where they do have it or don't have it, it's another question I'd like to kind of throw out there.
Well, I'll answer that. Last time I was in like enterprise land, we had, you know, you have to track the, not that enterprise land, you had to track the outages, and then, you know, we weren't allowed to just get away with the downtime. We had to assess the exact, you know, financial loss per period of time. And that's where it gets, you know, to that, you know, pencil whipping or whatever, because it's like, what is down? Because, you know, just because it's pingable or whatever, you could have actually lost, you know, money for the last 4 hours because of service degradation. And I think that that's like a place where definitely people have to have a lot more, you know, modeling and work there. And sadly, that's one of those things where the amount, you know, if they knew how much they were losing, then they would spend the money to do that analysis. And there's this weird chicken or egg thing because they don't know how much they're using. And I have actually a question. Luckily, I'm not bound by these constraints anymore. But I remember, you know, working at several banks and such, and there are two things that would prevent people from getting like root or commit access that I used to bump into. One was like the access token, like whether you were insider or not, and that's based on what systems you had access to. And the other one was like things like PCI compliance, and then, you know, whether, you know, you can actually audit the, you know, the trail, and whether the security implications of one person being able to perform severe acts on the financial systems that whole Superman 2 with the two keys thing. And so I have a question, especially to, I guess this might be to Ishay, about how did you guys go about resolving that with Kaching, which sounds like a financial platform, because I don't want the enterprise developers here to like go into despair, because like my only option is to quit because, you know, I've got these regulations.
I don't know exactly how to answer that. We have monitoring and reporting. We have actually a system that does only reporting. Different parts, different services are sending reports to the central reporting system, and this reporting system forwards it on to whoever wants to know about it. And anyone may register on an event, like puts his email, basically, I want to get these 10 reports, or, oh, this report, I don't care about it anymore, I want to remove it. And you get daily or on demand or whatever events on any such thing. If something is missing, the business guy is coming over to the engineer, going to the engineers and saying, oh, I need this type of reporting for such and such purposes. And yeah, you got it. We spend a lot of efforts to make the reporting system very easy to use. In the code, it's like a command line. It's one liner. Boom, you got it. So it will, for lazy engineers, and good engineer is a lazy engineer, it'll be very easy to use and promote on to the whoever needs to know.
So Javier, you've been, you know, selling to large enterprises and banks. Now you're part of an extremely large corporate public company. How do you view this issue and visibility as balanced off with compliance and all the hurdles that puts in there?
Well, fortunately, VMware is actually a fairly progressive company. So while we have, you know, a centralized IT and we have different sort of levels of access depending for internal systems, depending on what you need to do. Mm-hmm. I think culturally the company, as most companies in the Bay Area tend to be, and certainly technology companies, is pretty flexible with how they kind of lay that out. In terms of the organizations that I've either worked for or worked with, I mean, there's no getting around a certain degree of compliance, right? If they have a regulatory requirement, say HIPAA or something like that, where you seriously can't access a system in a certain way, if anything, that kind of inspired us when we were first building Hyperic to build certain features into the product that were going to help within the boundaries of what was possible, right? For example, if you can't log into the box, we had a big pharmaceutical customer who had a specific requirement that said, forget about root access. We don't want anybody, even the ops people themselves, to be able to actually log into any of these machines ever. I don't know actually who could, right? But for some reason, they had that requirement. And they had this very convoluted process for deploying applications. And so we looked at that and we're like, wait a minute, you want to move more quickly to deploy all these Tomcat applications onto a grid, but you're telling people they can't actually log in and either look at files. I mean, you're building all this custom tooling. So there's certainly things that either the company itself has to build tools to account for that, to centralize some of that information and provide it out, like you were saying, and expose that reporting out to the appropriate people without compromising any of those requirements. It shouldn't be the source for demoralizing people. I mean, listen, regulatory standards tend to be demoralizing in their own right and for a variety of reasons, right? But the truth is some of these things do have a very, very solid purpose. And the question is, well, how do operations people, developers, how do people that are trying to move the business forward adapt to that and actually, rather than sort of dropping their, flailing their arms and saying, okay, well, fuck it, we're not doing it, right? Fine, I can't log into the box. You figure out who rooted it and ruined the whole thing for us. There's a lot of, there should be an opportunity, I guess, for innovation and some creativity there. To go around, and I have seen even at this pharmaceutical company that whether it was by working with a vendor like us or by engaging their own creative developers to say, okay, well, if we can't log into boxes, what can we do to actually get a little bit more comfort around the visibility? We saw some really awesome things get developed.
Great. Okay, so we got a little bit
just a thought. And so if you're looking at a monitoring vendor and you are in an environment like which requires a lot of compliance, so always look out for access control. You know, any monitoring solution which doesn't have good access control is not the right solution in that environment. But if you're building your own monitoring solution, then don't have access control as a afterthought design for access control. It's very difficult to put in later on good access control.
Yeah. And we learned, I guess, that Tivoli doesn't work if you don't have root access. Thanks, John. or was it Rivoli? Sorry.
Rivoli doesn't, yeah. Okay, so we got two more questions here. So I'm going to go on the left, and then, John, we're going to finish up with you.
Sure. Maybe to answer your earlier question about do we review metrics, I work for a large software as a service company. Every week, we see it an essential part of our business to look at both marketing, sales, engineering, customer-facing metrics, how well customers use our systems. And around those metrics, we also monitor a lot of things. And what's important for us of late is not just monitoring our boxes or our production environment, but having actionable intelligence out of those monitoring systems. You know, yes, my average response time after this release went down a couple hundred milliseconds. Why? What can I tell my software engineering team about what areas of the system got affected? So that became extremely important for us of late. But the question I have for the panelists, interesting thing came out around budgeting. What's maybe unique about us is we have one person that's responsible for software engineering, QA, and ops. And then when you're on the hook to make sure you have the right ops people, the right software engineers, and you can also very quickly balance the needs of those both environments. So the question is, how do you see this? How well do you see this working as company scale? And what do you guys think about that type of setup for engineering DevOps?
From a budget perspective, I think it's in the previous panel, as there was a conversation around its cost, its quality, and its speed. Right. So that's what it has to be optimized around. DevOps is one solution that works very well in optimizing on all those three. It also boils down to if you have a very disjointed kind of environment and you don't have visibility, you have say availability issues, performance issues, it's all hands on the deck kind of situation many times, and you are you know, you end up spending a lot of money in troubleshooting those. So it's, I think the key factors from a budget perspective that comes down to what's your mean time to resolution of a problem, how can you, you know, what's your cost to resolution, how much is it hurting the revenue if you have, you know, downtime or a performance issue or, you know, some feature not working, issues like those.
And if I can just add one more thing. I think, so I could say definitively that the places that have had that centralized combination of ops and development and QA under a single, hopefully, you know, high enough level executive that you know, that person has the ability to affect change in the organization, that works, you know, 10 times out of 10 better from what limited things I've seen, even at companies, public, large-scale companies, dramatically better. And that puts all the more weight on finding the right person for that job. And the tough part is that, again, this is the subject of biases. If you bring in somebody who hasn't had that type of responsibility, who maybe has been a career software engineering person and a development manager and has never really owned operations or the opposite, then you're likely to find that you know, the person is going to tip one way versus the other regardless of what the business dictates. And that's part of what I think is actually very important about not only this movement, but at these types of events, but frankly that we need to start kind of building up those skills and having people, you know, grow up into the organization to hold those types of jobs to make a very, very big change, I guess.
All right. Alspa, bring us home.
No
make
pressure.
Make it good.
You asked about reviewing metrics or right. reviewing monitors and that sort of thing. In my experience, there's two really great places to have metrics in place. One is before you launch this new feature that has awesome widgets. If you go to the product people who are working on that feature and say, "Oh, we're gonna have you know, coffee on the site, and we're gonna introduce this new coffee feature." Do you want to know after launch? Do you want to know coffees per second? And the answer to that will always be yes, because they want to see how awesome is it. Like, was it really awesome, and then did it like plateau off? You know, so introducing new metrics at the feature level, application at the site level is a really good place to get those things in place. And by the way, now you have some idea of how much CPU each coffee per second takes, which makes justifying CapEx budgets easy. The second part is postmortems. That thing that killed us last week and brought the site down, why didn't we see that coming? And maybe there was something that happened and that's been happening, and we were close to this edge or something along those lines. Well, sounds like we need a graph for that. Those are the two places. There's never been in my experience somebody say, "No, I don't think we should really track that." You know, like I'm going to go with less information. You'll never hear that. I not in my experience anyway. So those are the two things I thought I'd say.
Response, quick hits before we wrap it up.
So I think it's a very good observation. The place to start with and what metrics you should review is you know, what we suggest to our customers is start with identify your user transactions, which is kind of your features that users are doing. And the metrics that you can start with always is the response time, you know, how many people are doing that transaction, and, you know, how many people are failing with that transaction, and, you know, is it available? And the next level is if you can associate a dollar value to it, that becomes a very important business metric. So if you can track those five metrics on for each user transaction, for each feature, that's always a good place to start with. That's what we see with our customers all the time.
And, you know, obviously, great points. And what's, you know, obviously we're preaching to the choir here, but a lot of people kind of think about monitoring as, you know, hey, I'm monitoring now and I'm done. And really, that is absolutely the wrong way to be thinking about things. I mean, monitoring is something you need to be constantly refining, you know, because once you've instrumented, you know, number of, you know, memory swaps per second, who cares? You know, start turning things off that don't affect your business and start, you know, getting a lot more focus on what you should be watching. Yeah.
Your customers don't care.
Exactly.
Right.
I totally agree. And, I just want to add to it that it needs to come from not the engineering necessarily, also from the business spec scope. So when something's going wrong with a site, my CEO doesn't ask me, oh, why did it went wrong? He asks me, where is the monitoring system to make sure it doesn't happen again? So it's not good enough to find the root problem. With the real action item should be, what monitoring system do we need to put in place? And in order to do that, of course, it takes more time. It's more expensive. But over time, it enforces your defense lines. So it should come from all over the organization, not just engineering.
Great. Gareth, got anything you want to wrap up with?
I think, just real quick again, the tools that we need to make some of these metrics, I think, are going to get more potentially complex. One of the questions was talking about having to write a lot of custom monitors to really monitor business metrics. They're quite hard to define, and then you can't get them out of the box. So I think there could be a really good market going forward for tools that make it easier to make those custom monitors that actually monitor useful business metrics as opposed to CPU or memory usage, etc.
Great. Okay.
Last word?
Three words each, yeah.
Over time.
Separate your leading indicators from your trailing indicators and know what how to make the difference between them. It's not all CPU, memory, and disk, right? There's a lot more to it.
Yep. On the same thoughts, start top-down as much as you can. Business metrics, application metrics, and then your CPU memory metrics. That's how that's their importance level is.
Collaborate and share.
Break barriers between departments. Actually, if you have no departments, is the best.
Okay, great. Thanks to the panel. Feasible. A little round of applause, everybody.